This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And we are live here from Brother Jimmy's Barbecue at City Place in West Palm Beach, Florida. We have a packed house here tonight for National Spring Training Live.
All right.
Carly Sloes, Dave Jadler, with you until 8 o'clock. We have some special guests. Sean Doolittle will join us in a bit, but with us right now to kick things off is the President of Baseball Operations and General Manager of the Nationals, Mike Rizzo, is with us. How you doing, Mike?
Hey, guys. Pleasure. Thanks, guys. Everyone for coming.
You packed them in. There was a line out the door. They knew you were coming.
Damn, to hear me? That's good.
It is good. Two baseball games today, Mike. You can only pick to be in one place, and I know I was a few rows behind you that you were here at the home game in West Palm.
Yeah, I usually pick the non-road game, I call them.
So, veteran play there.
Yeah, just we send either, you know, one of the McKeons or Bob Boone over to the visiting game, and I get all the information from him.
You have a couple of McKeons over there. Got some baseball knowledge.
Yeah,
the
place is packed when the McKeons are in the house. So Jack and Casey.
That's a lot of baseball right there.
No question.
You added Trader Jack to your staff this year.
No doubt. Jack is he's been around about 50 years. He's been a successful general manager, field manager, farm director, scout. He's forgotten more about the game than I'll ever know. So it's good to have people that know more than you on your staff because they make me look better.
And I think while we're going one way, he's going the other way. He's in better shape than all of us.
No question about it. He's a spry 88 years old, so he's looking good.
Unbelievable. Yeah, that's worth some applause right there. Mike, your take on what you saw today, the action at this point, starting pitcher assessment. Patrick Corbin got his 85 pitches in five innings. First inning, they hit a few balls that got through and got in the gaps and down the line.
Yeah, I mean, the successful outing, when you get your pitches in and you walk off the mound happy and healthy and feeling good about it, that's a successful day. I put very little weight on what performance and stats and that type of thing go on in spring training, especially for the veteran players who've cemented a piece of the team. We have some competitive spots that people are fighting for, and those are always fun to watch, but Patrick had a great day today. He threw his 85 pitches, threw four or five different pitches, and was working on a few things, and threw a lot of strikes and pitched to contact, and he scored a few runs off him, but overall a successful day.
I know we've asked you this over the years, so I know what your answer is, but I'll ask it for this group here. What is your opinion around the game as long as you have a correlation between a spring training record and what the season might look like?
Absolutely, absolutely zero. The part of spring training that I'm focused in on is preparing the team to play opening day. That's get their work in, feel good about themselves, have the needle moving north as we get closer to the season, and once you take off, you hit the ground running, and that to me is a successful spring training. There's been a lot of 400 spring training averages, and when the bell rings and the pitchers start bearing down and preparing and that type of thing and not getting to work, and then things change. So we have a pretty stable roster right now. We know practically 20-21 of the 25 we're going to take north. There's those three or four or five different spots that could change, that are fluid, that there's still competition in, and we're looking forward to the last week or so before we start this thing for real.
And so you talk about moving the needle moving north. So it's this about this is the time, right, with about a week to go where you start zoning in on what you want to see to build toward opening day.
Yeah, play cleaner games, play more fluid. You know, you'll see players play longer.
You did today, seven innings for all the starters.
Yeah, seven innings for the starters. You know, we want to see them play a couple of nine-inning games to be on their feet for nine full innings before they move on. You'll see some relievers throwing more pitches and more innings than they're accustomed to. We want guys to be able to go back-to-back, and some of them back-to-back-to-back before we break camp. We kind of like to stress our pitchers right before we go. Then we can lay off the pedal a little bit, and they'll feel good about starting the season the right way.
So guys like Patrick Corbin, 85 pitches. We saw Max. He's been close to 90 already. Does the next start be the one for them where they back off a little bit?
Yeah, we'd like to get them as close to 100 pitches as we can before we back off. So, if they felt that the 85 to 88 or 90 was where they need to be, then they'll describe it there. We've got all six, seven of our starters have pitched deep into games and have thrown plenty of pitches. So, we really like where our rotation is right now. I think all five starters have reached the 80 pitch mark. Corbin 85 and Scherzer's gone to 90 so far, and they'll be coming into their last start of spring training pretty soon, and then we'll back off a little bit as we get to the season.
The other thing as you approach the season is you want to get through a full spring training as healthy as you can be, and you had obviously a setback with an injury to Michael Taylor a couple of days ago, and we had you on the broadcast on Saturday, and you gave us a bit of an update. I think since that point, Michael has at least had some sort of semblance of baseball activity, which is pretty quickly after the injury. So I know you don't want to put a timetable on it, but how do you see him progressing right now?
Yeah, nothing's changed since the first diagnosis. You know, we think he's 2 to 4 weeks or so away, and we'll see what progresses. When we give those kind of parameters, they're so fluid and they're so tricky that's why we try and stay away from them. He's doing very rudimentary baseball things. When we hear that he's taking swings and that type of thing, you're talking about one-handed swings with a small little bat and just trying to go through the motion of the swing. So, we're trying to keep the weight off the knee and the hip. You know, he's doing all his exercises in a pool and we're happy to have that piece of equipment for them to do it. But if you can leave this thing healthy and prepared to play, then I think that's been a successful spring.
You've done enough springs where that isn't the case. So this one to this point is extremely successful in that regard.
Yeah, we have several games left though, so we're looking forward to finishing strong, playing clean games, pitchers throwing strikes, and picking the ball up and that type of thing. Again, if we give up a couple of hits and a couple of runs and lose a game or two, so be it. As long as we get our work in and we play the games the right way and get to a pace that we feel comfortable. Well, when the bell rings, we can go full blast, 100 miles an hour.
And you talked about competition for a few spots left. You're talking about the makeup of the bench because of the injury to Michael Taylor being one reason, and how you want to make up the bench and the back end of the bullpen, knowing what your rotation is going to be.
Sure, the periphery of the roster is, fortunately, that's the decisions we have. You know, there's been in the past where we've had the main part of the roster that we had to make decisions. But we've got a pretty established team, and we've got guys more or less earmarked for our starting 2021 players. And we're going to see who comes out of spring training feeling the best, and that's the best fit for our club to fulfill those bullpen spots and those last couple spots off the bench.
Yeah, you obviously a lot is focused on the opening day roster, but the opening day roster, you could have a transaction in the first few days. Are there certain players who are non-roster invites that you can put at AAA and they'd be right there as insurance? Have there been guys who've shown you a little bit that maybe you're seeing for the first time in the organization?
Yeah, our pro department did a nice job of the non-roster invites to camp. We've shown propensity over the last couple of spring trainings. We've had a lot of non-roster players make the opening day club or make the club soon thereafter. I think that the last 4 years we've had at least one non-roster invite impact our club. So you know, I think that's the reason we get such qualified and quality guys on non-roster deals, because we're honest and truthful to them, and they know they have an opportunity and a chance to make the club, and we've shown in the past, you know, that we're willing to do that.
And of course, when you get down to the end of the spring, and Mike, all teams are making roster decisions. You've done it in the past. Sometimes a player becomes available through waivers or releases that you might be interested in, even at that late date, right before the season starting.
Yeah, there's always a possibility. We never stop looking and evaluating our team, and you know, we're going to take the best 25 north, and that gives us the best chance to come out of the gates fast, and we'll certainly continue to do it this year.
Yeah, and you made a signing just a couple of days ago, a left-handed reliever, Tony Sipp, for a pitcher who's coming out of the bullpen and who's a situational guy. That is, it's very late to sign, but could he potentially be ready for opening day, because he doesn't have to stretch out like a starting pitcher would, or get at bats like a position player would?
Yeah, he has an opportunity because, you know, he has to build himself up to 28 or 25 pitches, whereas a starter would have to be 85 to 90 pitches. So there's an opportunity, you know, as the clock ticks, you know, he needs to get out there. I know he's thrown a couple of sides, he's going to soon throw a live batting practice, and then we'll know exactly where he's at and how close he is, and we'll make our plans accordingly.
All right, Mike Rizzo is with us, the Nationals President of Baseball Operations and General Manager. This is National Spring Training Live from Brother Jimmy's here in West Palm Beach. Don't forget, we have one from Brother Jimmy's in National Harbor coming up the night before opening day, 6:30 to 8 from Brother Jimmy's in National Harbor. That's March the 27th. We're coming back here with more with Mike Rizzo, and we continue on 106.7 The Fan.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome back to National Spring Training Live here from Brother Jimmy's at City Place in West Palm Beach. Charlie Slows, Dave Jagler with you until 8 o'clock. We're joined right now by Nationals President of Baseball Operations and General Manager Mike Rizzo. And, Mike, when we think about when you mentioned the makeup of the team and not many roster spots to be had, that's because of all the work you and your staff did in the offseason from the time the season ended in making the moves you did, starting with acquiring Kyle Bearclaw from the Marlins and eventually signing Trevor Rosenthal and trading for a catcher, signing a catcher, signing a starting pitcher, signing a second baseman. You did a lot to make it so that spring training there weren't going to be a lot of decisions to make.
Well, we did. We had a very active and busy off season, and that was by design. We lost a lot of players to free agency, so we had holes to fill and a roster to create, and we felt that you know, early on, we were very aggressive with the key items that we had to attack, and went out and got Patrick Corbin right away, and added him to our already strong rotation. We went out and got Anibal Sanchez, who was a great addition to us, and then re-signed Jeremy Hellickson. So we made three signs of in our rotation. We made a couple of trades for our bullpen and added Trevor Rosenthal, and then traded for a catcher, which we thought was the second most pressing item on our team, and felt that with Yan Gomes on the roster and doing what he can do, we felt that getting another top flight all-star caliber catcher in Kurt Suzuki, who we knew very, very well from his time with us and loved him and really wanted him back, so we were fortunate enough to get him signed. So we did. Our staff, we worked really hard this year, and factor that in with our pro scouts and our international people doing their thing. So it was a very active and very busy off-season. Ownership allowed us the resources to allocate towards the roster, and we feel that we've got ourselves a championship caliber club again, and we're one of the very few teams that that are competing each year, year in and year out for the last eight seasons. We've had a really, really good team. And in combination doing that, we still have a really fertile farm system. You saw, the emergence right in front of our eyes of some of the young players that you've heard about and we've talked about. But you saw play today, Luis Garcia and Carter Kaboom and Juan Soto, of course, is an established player now, and Robles and some of the other young kids. And there was a time that we had three Latin infielders in a major league game that were below 18 years old. So we talk about everyone talks about our window closing. Our window's wide open, man. We're going to be around for the foreseeable future. And our goal is always win. We're very competitive here in Washington, and we're going to put ourselves a good product for a really good fan base, and that's our job here.
You did so much trying to mention them all in one sentence. You re-signed Matt Adams, who said that was an easy decision for him to come back, and in getting Brian Dozier, what power that might not be in the position you had before could make up for a lot at second base. Plus, he's a Gold Glove caliber second baseman who comes into this year 100% healthy, where he wasn't last year.
Yeah, our motto, our four pillars are pitching, defense, athleticism, and speed, and we've got all of those in spades right now. We've, the defense and the pitching go hand in hand. We saw that last year when you can't in this league you can't give up, 28, 29, 30 outs in a game and then run yourself into three or four outs a game and expect to win. That was the paramount reason that we lost all those one run games last year was our sloppy defense and our bad base running, and that had a lot to do with the personnel on the field, because a lot of people due to injuries were playing in positions that they weren't accustomed to, that they weren't suited to play, and our defense struggled because of it, and thus our pitching struggled, and thus we won 82-80 instead of the 92-95 win pace that we're used to. And I think that we addressed all those pressure points, and we've worked extremely hard on our consistency, both offensively, run construction, and our offensive efficiency. Our base running we think is going to be really, really good this year. We've got ourselves, we're as fast as any team in baseball. I think we're going to steal as many bases as anybody in baseball, but you have to steal them when you need to steal them, and you have to be very, very efficient at it to make it work.
Mike, you always credit your staff and the guys who work under you, and we talked about the McKeons who were here before. There's a guy sitting at their table who's a huge addition to your organization. You talk about some of the names and the players that we've seen on the field in the spring. When you first took over as the general manager, one of the first things you had to do was go down to the Dominican Republic and fix things down there. And from where that was then to where it is now, Johnny DePuglia is sitting at that table. And he's one of the big reasons that you have a Juan Soto and a Victor Robles in the organization. I mean, from where it was to where it is now is truly an amazing story.
It really is. We went from worst to first in international scouting and player development. Johnny D was, he's the main factor there. I've known him for years. I competed against him for years, and I knew when I needed to go and get myself a top flight international director and somebody to run that program, Johnny was the first guy I called and the last guy I called. So, but we keep him in the other room because he's off in trouble. So, but he's done an amazing job. The prospects that we just talked about, they don't knock on the gate at Nats Park. You have to go in the weeds, and Johnny has been there with his staff and myself many, many times where you've got cows in the field, and the these are nowhere near finished products as far as ballparks, and some of these places that he goes to are not the safest places in the world. So risks a lot of things to put these players on the field, and they've really taken to this organization very, very well, and key to it is he and his international people.
Wanted to ask you one thing about the state of the game. Last week, the Major League Baseball and the Players Association came out with some new pace of play guidelines and some new rule changes that are going to impact the game, and specifically for your position, the trade deadline is going to change, although I believe not until the 2020 season. One of the questions that we always have to to ask, and it's very difficult to answer, is, well, what's the difference between the July 31st trade deadline and the August 31st trade deadline? Well, and I thought the trade line was in July, but yet you're still making trades in August. That's going to change. So how is that going to impact your job to have just basically one trade deadline in seasons going forward?
Well, I think, you know, the non-waiver deadline, that's the one after July 31st, is, you know, we've used that to our advantage many, many times where, you know, the trade deadline has passed and we've made good you know, fluid moves after it because things come up between July 31st and the end of the season. So, you know, that'll our strategy will have to change with that. You know, teams will have to decide much, much quicker who's, you know, who's in and who's out, who's got a chance to win, and who's going to be sellers and who's going to be buyers. And I think that that the teams that are going to be buyers are going to have to be much more aggressive and in their pursuits because, you know, after the team you have on August 1st is the team you're going to have throughout, and you better have some players that are going to help you beyond August 1st, stockpiled in your minor leagues. Because once you make your trades or the trade deadline passes, that's your team.
You might see stuff happen even earlier than expected, a month earlier. Hey, go back a couple of years. You had to be aggressive. That's how you were able to get the guy who just walked into the restaurant, Sean Doolittle, in that trade you made with Oakland.
He tried to sneak in. You just outed him. There he is over there. That's Sean Doolittle over there.
He's the most non-sneakable guy that you could have in this restaurant. we often try and be aggressive and kind of beat the last week of the trade deadline teams, and we evaluate ourselves constantly. We're in constant fluid motion on what our roster is going to look like, and I usually have a pretty good feel for where we're at, at or near the amateur draft status. So that's like the first week in June. I think we have a good feel, June 1st, of what this team is and who they are. Are we pretenders or are we for real? And we begin our strategy at that time. That's when we give our plan to ownership for the trade deadline. And because there's financial considerations that we have to work through with them. And those are oftentimes when we see an opportunity to jump on a trade that we think is a perfect fit for us early, we've often taken it.
Well, Mike, we hope the reasons you make them is at that time that. Or reasons for making the team better and not knock wood because you have to replace somebody who's hurt. That's always the best case scenario.
There's no doubt. There's many, many reasons for making them. And, in the last 7 years, we've been in position, we've put ourselves in position to contend. And we hope that continues for a very, very long time.
Well, Mike, we thank you for stopping by. I know the folks always enjoy hearing from you, and especially hearing from you live here at Brother Jimmy's in West Palm Beach.
Thank you. What a great crowd.
Yeah, great crowd here tonight. We're going to take a break. We'll have an update from PJ Elliott coming up. We'll be back on the other side of the break with Sean Doolittle, and later your phone calls and questions here at Brother Jimmy's in West Palm Beach. This is National Spring Training Live on 106.7 The Fan.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.
We are back live at Brother Jimmy's Barbecue here at City Place in West Palm Beach, Florida with National Spring Training Live. We're here until 8 o'clock tonight, and it'll be Aaron Hawksworth and Chris Miles taking over with overtime. And as we get the second hour kicked off here, we're joined the man whose Twitter handle is What Would Do Do. So on a Monday night in West Palm Beach, what is he doing? He's here with us at Brother Jimmy's Barbecue. Sean Doolittle.
Thanks for having me, guys. Good to be here.
So we just had a little bit of an in-house debate during the break based on a trivia question we threw out to our live audience about your pitching repertoire. Mm-hmm. We found out that some of the technology has been misinterpreting what you throw.
Yeah, you guys had some split finger fastballs in the mix there for me, and I've never thrown one of those. But I have noticed that since I've been with Washington, every time I throw a changeup, I look. Well, every time I throw a pitch in general, I look back at the scoreboard to see how hard I threw it. But when I do the changeup, it says that it's a split. It registers on the scoreboard as a split. So whatever that technology is, either based on maybe the spin or the movement of the pitch, it recognizes that as a splitter, which I guess I'm going to take it as a compliment because that means it has that downward action that I'm looking for. So we can call it whatever you want.
But if it's a changeup, it's a changeup.
Right, but I don't want to make you guys look bad.
Well, I call it a changeup.
Like, I wasn't trying to fool you guys. I was okay. Trying to fool the hitters.
You're doing a pretty good job of that.
All right.
So now you're looking. So you look over your shoulder at the gun?
Oh, yeah.
Or do you do it? I mean, do you kind of sneak a peek? Or are you?
Well, it's really easy because it's in the it's you know in right center on the big board.
So you catch the throw back.
When I catch the ball back from the catcher. A lot like when I'm walking back up the, I can glance out of the corner of my eye and see what it says.
All right, so you're on the road. You got to find it.
Yeah, you got to find it. Some of them are on like the ribbon boards on the sides. Mm-hmm. So you can kind of do the same thing like on your walk back up to the mound. You can
so we know what you're watching for in the bullpen. You're looking at.
Yeah.
You're finding the radar gun ratings.
Totally. Yeah.
Before you come in the game.
Yep.
How important is that to you though? Once you're in the game.
Does actually, it just... a little bit because I want to know. Like, there's nights where. I have some room for error because I have my good fastball. Depending on the reading, and then there's other nights where I peek at the first few, and maybe it's a little bit lower, and you know that's a night that I really have to hone in on location and maybe throw some of those split changeups that we were talking about.
Split changeups?
We can call it whatever you want.
Okay,
we'll figure it out. It's spring training.
Now the other day, say spring training, left-handed hitter.
Yeah,
you were really working on your slider against the left-handed hitters.
Yeah, it's been a pitch that I have been working on a lot in spring training so far, and I think that was the only lefty that I faced in that outing. So we actually had a meeting. I was making a little bit of a mess in that inning, and Lily came out to give me a breather, and he was like, "What do you want to do?" And Sevy and I really briefly talked about, you know, giving him a steady diet of sliders just because I wanted to work on it. And I threw a couple of good ones early in the at-bat, and the one that he hit caught a little bit too much of the zone, and he was able to get – it broke his bat, but he got just enough on it to get it over the second baseman's head. But, you know, in spring training – this is the time where I need to work on that. The first two that I threw, I was really happy with the execution and the shape. That last one, sometimes when you try to make it too nasty and you go for that strikeout, the swing and miss slider, it kind of stays up just a little bit. And that's what happened in that situation. But spring training is a time where, you know, even though I threw my fastball
88.5% of the time.
Yeah, last year.
Yep.
I really, really need to work on the off-speed stuff in spring training because I've always had it in the bullpen. Like, when nobody stands in, like, I can – it's pretty good. But, like, sometimes, like, during the game, like, it's totally different when I'm trying to pitch in a later leverage situation and it's not my strength and – you know, so trying to develop it now in spring training so that I have the confidence during the season when the catcher calls for it, you know, I have some experience using it.
So, you know, when as fans or even as broadcasters, we feel like we can influence what's happening on the field when you're pitching. So the other day you're in the middle of that outing, and I happened to say on the air, you know, this is really the first time, you know, Sean doesn't want to give up the game here, but it's probably good he gets in a little bit of trouble because he can throw a lot of pitches and he's going to get himself stretched out.
Yeah.
Well, then you gave up the game.
Yeah.
But hey, you know, you talked about it after the fact. You wanted to stretch out because you had so many easy innings. You needed to actually have some stress because you get there in the season. You don't want the first time you've had a tough spot to be the game against the Mets on opening day when you're saving Max's win. You want to have that experience.
Right. And that's what veteran guys will do that in spring training. They have a bad day and they're like, oh, you know, I was just working on stuff. I made several mistakes in that outing. I've been working on some mechanical stuff hasn't quite clicked yet, and you know, I gave up some soft hits. I gave up a couple of really loud hits as well. But it was good for me to have to throw more pitches in an outing. But what it really did afterwards, it made me go right into the video room, really start breaking things down, looking at some of the metrics as far as the way the ball was coming out of my hand, what my release height was, what my release extension was. Because in the first four outings, everything went really, really smoothly. I think I had one base runner. Right. And so had I not but then again, like, I wasn't getting a ton of swing and misses on my fastball. I think I had maybe one strikeout in each of those outings. I wasn't quite where I wanted to be, even though I was getting decent results, if that makes sense. This forced me to really go and examine things under a microscope and found some stuff that we've been working on the last 2 days that had that outing, had I wiggled out of that, maybe I wouldn't have gone into the video room. Because, you know, well, I put up another zero, it's fine. Like, it's working well enough, you know. So, you know, that's part of spring training, is being able to take your lumps, but being able to learn from it in this controlled environment.
You talk about the change in mechanics. It looked like you were using a little bit of a different leg kick. Are you kind of incorporating a slide step now a little more?
Yeah.
Are you going to use that with men on base or even with nobody on base to try to mess with a hitter's timing?
Yeah, it's funny that you said that. I've been working on...
It was very noticeable because you've always been a kind of a high leg kick hesitation.
Yep.
And I'm going, wait a second, when did he start slide stepping?
Yeah, so I've been working on that a bunch in the offseason and so far in camp. And I think it's something that I can use whether there's guys on base or not, because my leg kick is very slow and deliberate. The slide step, even with nobody on base, is a way that you can almost like sneak up on the hitter, because they use the slow leg kick to time, you know, maybe they have a leg kick of their own, right, or they have some sort of timing mechanism that it gives them plenty of time to try and time me up. So if every once in a while, once in at bat or so, I can make them super uncomfortable and make them feel rushed, you know, it can make the fastball that much more effective. But I also had some guys on base the other day, so it worked to control the running game too.
We're visiting with Sean Doolittle, the Nationals closer. We're here at Brother Jimmy's Barbecue in West Palm Beach, Florida. Charlie Slows, Dave Jagler with you until 8 o'clock with National Spring Training Live. And we're back with more after this break here from West Palm on 106.7 The Fan. And we say thanks to our title sponsor, GrahamCapitalWealth.com. Charlie Slows, Dave Jagler, back with you from Brother Jimmy's here in West Palm Beach. We're here until 8 o'clock. We're visiting this half hour with Nationals closer Sean Doolittle. We thought, we were talking with him during the break, that he had a Brother Jimmy's hat with a red hat with a J on it. But we learned it was the hat of a team that was in your hometown in Jersey City, the Jersey City Jerseys.
Yeah, my home state. Jersey City jerseys, and, you know, we were talking before, I've started paying a lot of attention to baseball hats over the last couple months, and this company, Ebbets Field Flannels, makes a lot of really, really cool, like, old-school vintage obscure teams, and I've started to collect a few of them and start working them into the rotation when I'm not wearing my work hat.
you talk about the last couple months, how many books did you read in the off season?
Oh, man, I don't know.
Double digits?
Yeah.
Easy?
Yeah.
I did an event with Trevor Rosenthal the other day at the ballpark, and
okay.
He said it's kind of, he said it's intimidating being around you, because he's like, he intimidates me with books.
I don't.
So I don't.
I haven't.
I don't know what that means.
Every day I walk in with a stack of books.
Yeah.
And I just like put them down next to our locker, and I just start reading books.
That's very intimidating.
But you're at home, you're out red, right? Because your wife's working on her second master's.
Yes, she has. She's read way more books than me, probably way more important books than me. I'm definitely second fiddle to her in a lot of aspects, and that's just one of them.
So do you nonfiction over fiction?
Fiction over nonfiction.
Okay.
Yeah, it's my escape. It's something I like doing away from the field to kind of, get away and reset and decompress for a little bit.
Is there a genre you prefer?
I go in like phases. Right now, I've been reading a lot of like science fiction and fantasy stuff. that's all pretty new to me. I've only really started diving into that stuff the last couple months. And
well, I thought you were big into the Star Wars. I mean, they've got some Star Wars socks in these packs. These prize packs were given out. Some of
really?
Them have them. That's, I mean, you might want to try to win one.
All right, so I might walk out of here with some socks, which is good because I'm wearing sandals right now. So I might walk out of here wearing socks. Yeah, and
you're
going
to be heading into the cold weather soon.
But hey, yeah. No, I just never read any real science fiction stuff. But it's been a lot of fun.
What about the Game of Thrones stuff? Are you into that with the?
I'm super into the show, and I'm super excited for it to come back. But I haven't gotten into the books. Partially because each book's really thick, right? And he hasn't finished it, so like I don't want to get into the books, and then I know roughly where the books leave off in relation to how the show wrapped up after season 5. So I was like, I can't imagine working my way through these books and then it's just there.
Be like left hanging.
Yeah, I'm not great with that. I still like things to kind of be, somewhat neatly wrapped up at the end of a story.
So now this year, opening day, you're going to come out, you're going to save Max's win, and you're going to come into the bullpen cart. Now, they had some auditions for the bullpen cart driver. Were you involved in any way in the selection process? Because you were the kind of the originator.
Yeah, I wasn't, but I saw some videos and stuff online, and it looked like it was a lot of fun. I wish I could have been there. I had to work. I was here in Florida, but it looked like a lot of fun.
It looked like what they were.
I don't know who won.
I don't know either.
Have they handed the keys to somebody?
I don't know. But it looked like with the road test with all the cones looked a lot harder than the drive from the bullpen would be.
Yeah. Well, if they can handle that, I think they can handle anything. And they had I don't know if it was Screech or one of the presidents was standing in the middle of the road course. And I was like, that's pretty bold. And
well, they don't want you to hit Adam Eaton in right field or something.
Right. That's part of it, too. Yeah. Like, Screech might be running all around on the warning track. And you got guys running out of the dugout. To go play defense that inning, and that cart's not loud, so you can't hear it coming because it's electric, mm-hmm. and so the drivers really got to be paying attention. So that was probably a pretty good test.
So when Kyle Bearclaw was on with us a couple of weeks ago, we asked him about it because he was in the visitor's bullpen,
right?
Of course, the visiting team's not even thinking that it exists,
right,
and it's coming from behind the center field gate. In the days when teams had bullpen carts, they had one for each bullpen. It parked in the bullpen.
Oh, man.
So you knew you like that idea, huh?
Yeah.
you would, because sometimes you're ready to run in and you're waiting for it to pull up. The guy's got to get there really quick.
It times out pretty good at our place because our mound is on the opposite end of the gate to the field. So by the time you throw your last warm-up pitch, you take a drink of water, and you walk the length of the bullpen, it syncs up pretty good. So they nailed that.
Now, I remember you took one – took it in Arizona last year, right?
Right.
May. You kind of – it seemed like you had your feet up. And you, did you get the life story of the driver?
We didn't talk a whole lot. He kind of asked, where I was going and what I was doing and why I was in town. I'm not big on talking to, my Uber or Lyft drivers.
I was going to say, are you going to get five stars
from
the bullpen
cart? I'm not, a talkative guy. So, I really appreciate when they, when they give me that space, okay. if they ask me hey, what brings you to town? And I'm work, if they leave it at that, we're going to be just fine. But sometimes they're oh, so what do you do? I tell people I work for the Washington Nationals, which is technically true, right?
Technically, yeah.
And they're well, what do you do? It's oh, I do some on-field stuff for them.
Have you ever gone in a different direction, made up an occupation?
No, I'm not that creative, on the spot. I've never been able to,
Are you a Seinfeld fan?
No.
Okay, because in the show, George Costanza pretended to be – he wanted to be an architect. So now you've got to take it to the next level.
I don't have the confidence in myself to, commit to that bit.
You can't take on another identity?
I'd freeze up, I think. Start short circuit and probably just get out at a red light or something.
That's funny. But see,
are all the relievers going to take the bullpen cart? Because Bearclaw kind of made it sound like it was either we're all going to do it.
If Sean's going to do it, then we all have to get on.
Oh, really?
Is everyone going to do this?
I don't know. I hadn't really talked that much about it with them, but we did say that if they're shortening the inning break again,
5 seconds,
and time is that's precious. And if you can get out there, maybe you don't get out there that much quicker, but you're just able to get right into your warm-up pitches and get a little bit more out of them.
He said he liked the run in because it, you know, gives him a little rhythm and time to think and all that, but why would you want to be out of breath when you get to the mound?
I used to like to run too, and then last year, like, I broke my foot, like, jogging in the bullpen before one of my outings. So, like, if I don't have to run, I'm not going to do it.
I never – the Todd Coffee sprint. I never got that.
I mean, I don't know. Like, my – just pitching in those situations, my heart rate is – it's up enough. Like, it's – there's plenty of energy in the building. I don't really need to get it going with a jog in from the bullpen.
Hmm. Well, you're excited about the season. How about some of your new bullpen mates? We mentioned Rosenthal, what he brings to the table, Bearclaw. How are you guys fitting in, and how's the conversation out there on game days?
It's been great. Those guys are awesome, and I think we've really started to gel really, really well. I really enjoy learning from them. There's a lot that, you know, I got to figure out how Rosenthal throws 102. You know, Bearclaw's his slider especially is so nasty. These are guys that have put up huge strikeout numbers over the course of their careers. Rosenthal having pitched in St. Louis in some, not just in the closer role, but in postseasons, and he has a ton of experience that I think is going to help us as a group. And I've really enjoyed working with them and learning from them and sharing the bullpen with them this year so far in camp, and I'm really excited for how things are shaping up for us.
Well, those conversations will be more intense and more frequent when the regular season starts. You're all in the bullpen on the same days,
right?
Where in spring training, maybe you're not.
Right. Yeah. Well, Rosenthal's locker is right next to mine in camp right now. So,
hence the books.
Hence the books. Yeah. It's weird. The only book I have right now in my locker is a Dr. Seuss book. So if he's intimidated by that, he might be in for a long year. But his perspective, he's coming back from Tommy John injury and being away from the game for over a year and a half. He's ready to go, man. Like, he's chomping at the bit.
He was ready to go at Winterfest.
Well, yeah, throwing 102 in a spring training game is just crazy.
Yeah, it's been fun, like, working with him and seeing, you know, some of the stuff that he's implemented. Because anytime you come back from an injury, a lot of times you end up implementing stuff that was part of your rehab into your program and stuff that's really started to, pay dividends for him, whether it's in the weight room or as part of his maintenance program, stuff that he does. In his bullpen sessions between his outings and stuff like that. So, we've talked a lot, and I'm really glad that he's here.
Sounds good. We're looking forward to seeing you both on a regular basis. Regular season is a week from Thursday, folks, March the 28th. Nationals and Mets at Nationals Park. Sean, we appreciate you stopping by.
Thanks so much for having me, guys.
So much
this
fun.
Is awesome.
Thank you.
You like barbecue? Have at it, man.
All right.
He's got the J on the hat.
All there right. you go. Brother, we won't tell. We'll let them think it's a Brother Jimmy's hat.
Get yourself a discount.
Extremely on brand. That's right.
There you go. Sean Doolittle with us here, National Spring Training Live. We're coming back after the break. We'll take your phone calls at 800-636-1067. For those listening to us driving home or at home or wherever you may be, and we'll take maybe some questions here from our live audience at Brother Jimmy's in West Palm Beach. Back in a few moments on 106.7 The Fan. Back here at Brother Jimmy's Barbecue with National Spring Training Live. We're in West Palm Beach, Florida at City Place. And we've had a packed house here. Mike Rizzo has been with us. Sean Doolittle, we just finished with him in the last half hour. The next half hour, your questions from our live audience and from our listeners on 106.7 The Fan at 800-636-1067. So if you want to call in, the lines are open right now. And, folks, if you have a question, come right up to the microphone. The jack of all things, Jack Hicks, our engineer, will put you on the radio. So come on up if you have a question for Dave and I. Well, Dave, Sean is always interesting, and so is our Nationals fan, Natalie, who made us some really nice, what would you call it? It's like a lanyard necklace?
It's a necklace with our name in letters.
Our name spelled out.
and she spelled them correctly, so we'd give her the bell.
That's right.
We appreciate Natalie for doing that.
Thank you, Natalie. Again,
and she got the bell. We got the bell in the background.
The bell from Vic back in our studios in the nation's capital. Well, when we look at where the Nationals are this spring, and, of course, we talk with Mike about it, Dave, you know, the wins and losses don't necessarily mean anything. Conditions can be difficult sometimes with wind playing a factor. Fields aren't always the best from, you know, where you go in terms of bad hops that you might see in the spring that you might not see in the regular season. So, again, when you see where the Nationals are, and we've gone through broadcasting games in the spring where you have to worry about injuries and then injuries that occur and who's not going to be ready. So but where the Nationals are at this point of the spring, the Michael Taylor injury really has been the only blemish that can affect the opening day roster the way you thought it would line up.
Yeah, I mean, and obviously, you know, some concern, too, on Howie Kendrick's part with, you know, he's been down a bit with a hamstring injury, but hopefully there's still the chance for him to get ready and be potentially there for opening day, or if not, just a few days after that. Howie has been trying to ramp up baseball activity, but, you know, it's you're now at the point of the spring, and Mike alluded to this, where it's time to kind of put the foot on the pedal and get, you know, kind of start treating things as regular season games. The veteran players will start to make some more road trips, and they'll play together. And it's interesting, you know, Davey Martinez has been going kind of alternating. You know, guys will play one day and get an off day, but he's pretty much playing his starting lineup together. He's played Trey Turner and Brian Dozier together exclusively. On the days that Turner and Dozier are playing, you're seeing Zimmerman and Rendon in the lineup at the same time. So the infielders are getting used to playing with each other. And then often you have Soto and Robles paired together because they haven't played a whole lot together in the same outfield, and that's going to be your center field, left field combo. So, you know, there have been games where, you know, before Taylor got hurt, Taylor was playing with Soto in there. Now you're seeing Robles and Soto playing together. You know, if one's in there, you're likely to see the other.
Yeah, Robles ran a country mile to catch a ball on the warning track in left center field today on the backhand. So in terms of covering ground, I don't know how much difference there is between Robles and Taylor in terms of the speed. At this point of his career, his first step, his routes may not be as sharp as Taylor's are, but he certainly has the speed to go get almost anything, and he has a terrific throwing arm too.
Yeah, and I'm just excited to see what he can do on the base paths. I mean, today he batted eighth in front of Corbin. I think there are going to be some games this year, and we saw Davey do that quite a bit last year, having the pitcher bat eighth. If you have Robles batting ninth rather than batting him eighth, then his speed is not curtailed by the pitcher spot, where either the pitcher is going to bunt him over, or with two outs you're not going to run at all. You know, if the pitcher makes the last out, then you have Robles leading off the next inning. If he gets on, then you've set the table for Turner and Eaton. And then you have three speed guys in a row potentially, you know, batting consecutively. So I think, you know, batting ninth also doesn't put a whole lot of pressure on a young player.
I really like
And there's going to be a lot on his plate with Taylor being down. You know, you're going to throw him in the deep end of the pool, and he's right there opening day.
Now, you and I talked about this and talked about it with Mike when he was on the broadcast on Saturday. If Taylor opens the season as we expect to be on the disabled list, it opens the door for possibly Andrew Stevenson to make the club. Would give them another left-handed bat. And certainly, you know, he's had a cup of coffee in the big leagues 2 years ago, and then last year he was up for the final couple of months on the roster where almost all of his at-bats came as a pinch hitter or the rare at-bat where he was in the game on a double switch. But he can run. He can play all three outfields. He puts the bat on the ball, does not strike out much. He's a contact guy. And we talked about his ability to bunt. Today he laid down a safety squeeze to drive in a run after Ryan Zimmerman, with some good base running, went first to third on a single to left center field.
Well, and the game we broadcast yesterday, he dropped down a bunt single up the third baseline. So he's been working on that aspect of his game. The one thing about your bench, you want to have versatility in your bench. So if you're behind in the sixth inning and you want to start a rally, well, then Stevenson would be a guy you'd pinch hit because you want him to get on base. You wouldn't use Matt Adams in this spot. You're saving Adams for the eighth or ninth inning spot against a hard-throwing closer when you need a home run. And if it's a righty, if it's a lefty, then you want Howie Kendrick to be that guy to potentially deliver an extra base hit for you. So Stevenson does give you some versatility as far as what you have in the mid to late innings. If you're behind early and need to pinch hit for a starter, he's the guy you'd go to.
Again, 800-636-1067 is our number, 800-636-1067. And we can take questions as well here from our audience live here at Brother Jimmy's in West Palm Beach. You know, we talk about the Howie Kendrick. If he isn't ready, Dave, he's a key right-handed bat to be late in the game. Matt Adams from the left side, two guys that can put the ball in the gap or hit it out of the ballpark. If it's not Kendrick ready on opening day from within the organization, the Nationals would have to make a decision either from someone like Adrian Sanchez, who could play multiple positions and is on the 40-man roster, or does it come from one of the non-roster invitees that you mentioned earlier in the show, or possibly someone on a waiver claim or a player released by another team in the next week before opening day?
Yeah, I would think for a short-term solution, Sanchez would be the guy. He doesn't give you the power threat late in games that Kendrick could give you. Not that Kendrick's a home run hitter, but he's a hitter that the other manager respects with a left-handed reliever in the game late. But Sanchez has the versatility to play defensively all over the diamond. So, I mean, I think that's a move that makes sense, considering that it's probably not going to be too long if Kendrick is not ready for opening day.
We're going to take a break and come back with our final segment here from Brother Jimmy's in West Palm Beach, Florida at City Place with National Spring Training Live. We're back in just a couple of moments here on 106.7 The Fan. Back here live at Brother Jimmy's Barbecue at City Place in West Palm Beach with National Spring Training Live. Charlie Slows, Dave Jackler with you until 8 o'clock. If you've missed any portion of the program, our interviews with Mike Rizzo and Sean Doolittle, you can hear them in podcast form. Just log on to thefandc.com, go to the overtime section, and that podcast will be there a bit later on. We'll take some phone calls if you'd like to call in now, 800-636-1067, 800-636-1067. We have a question from our live audience. Sir, what's your name? Where are you from?
My name is Nathan. I used to live in Burke, Virginia, but I live in central Massachusetts. And my question is, now that Bryce Harper's gone, do you think the Nationals will be able to sign Anthony Rendon to a long-term deal?
Well, we should have had him on when Mike Rizzo was here, but that's a great question.
I'm sure the hope is that they can get that done. Mike has stated that's something that they want to do and that Anthony Rendon is amenable to. And, you know, remains to be seen whether that can happen between now and the end of the season when he would become a free agent. So I'm sure the Nationals would like to do it now. And if Anthony Rendon is so inclined, you know, to not go through the uncertainty of an offseason, maybe they can work that out.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are a few things at play here. First of all, his agent is Scott Boras, but Scott Boras was the agent for Steven Strasburg, and everyone around the game and fans and the like assumed that Steven Strasburg would be a free agent and would maybe go to the highest bidder. Well, he re-signed with the Nationals before he ever became a free agent because he was comfortable. So if Rendon has the same feelings, then that's the way that will go. As far as the market, the fact that Nolan Arenado signed an extension, that takes, you know, a premium third baseman off the market. If Rendon does go to free agency, there will probably be a lot of teams bidding for him. So that would make it tougher for him to come back. So the best chance, obviously, as you said, for him to stay here is for this to happen before he ever becomes a free agent.
Also, too, if you could look at the fact that Nolan Arenado signed an extension, knowing what money he signed for, you could almost look at it like the market is set for possibly what would be out there in free agency.
True, but that's a high bar. He set a very high bar.
Set a high bar, but you'd have an idea of whether you can get what you want now versus trying to go through a bidding process in the offseason. Because as we know, you don't know where that goes.
Yeah, I mean, we spend time around Anthony Rendon. I think he's comfortable in D.C., comfortable in the clubhouse. He's doing great work now. He's really, you know, followed the lead of Ian Desmond as far as his great work with the Youth Baseball Academy. So I think there's a lot to be said for him putting down roots in D.C., and hopefully that will happen.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, last year he spent a little bit of time hurt at the beginning of the year. He's looking to have a full season. I think if you're the Nationals, you depend on him, whether he's in the number three or four spot in the batting order. Maybe this will be the biggest year of his career.
Well, I mean, the way it looks now, the way Davey's been playing it in the spring, looks like he's going to hit third. I mean, because it looks like Turner's going to be one, Eaton two, Rendon three, Soto four. So you have the right-handed hitter left, right, left. You know, the Nationals are a pretty right-handed heavy lineup. So you're not going to stack Eaton and Soto together.
Right.
So Rendon would go in the middle, and assuming that looks like Turner's going to lead off this season, then Rendon's your third hitter. And, you know, It's not necessarily the analytic way now, but back in the day, you know, your third hitters, you say, that's your best hitter. Well, I mean, you ask pitchers. I mean, we had Kyle Bearclaw in this seat a couple weeks ago and said, well, who's the toughest guy to face? And he didn't hesitate who it was. He said Anthony Rendon. Yep. I think a lot of pitchers would give you that answer.
Yeah, I think you've got some interchangeable parts. If there's a day where Davey decides to bat Eaton leadoff and Turner second, then Soto would go to three, right, and Rendon would go to four. So
what a game Soto had yesterday.
Oh, my goodness.
He hits a home run in the first inning off a lefty that almost hit the scoreboard in right center, you know, with no wind. Then he hit a dribbler up the third baseline and beat it out, was called out. So then he's one for two, and then he hits two doubles, one off a lefty, one off a righty. So he should have been four for four with three extra base hits and two of them off lefties.
Yep.
And he's hitting pitches in, he's hitting pitches out. I mean, he looks so ready for the season right now.
You know, I'm sitting there scratching my head yesterday during the broadcast, thinking, oh, yeah, this is his first big league spring training camp.
Right. we may have called, because we don't do every game, we may have called one or two of his at-bats last year, because he came up a couple of times from minor league camp and played in games. We didn't do the game in Lakeland when they played the Tigers and he hit that bomb to left center. Really, I mean, Davey Martinez, that opened his eyes right there. I remember him talking about that. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, but he feels like he's been here for a long time. Carries himself like a veteran.
Yeah, and when you see teams try and bust him in, it just seems you can't do it. He finds a way to let the ball get deep and still be able to turn on it and pull it.
Yeah, and he keeps his patience, because if you want to bust him in, they're going to try to get him to chase down and away. He'll take his walks because he does not go out of the strike zone.
I have a question here from our live audience. Sir, hello. How are you? What's your name? Where are you from?
Hi, my name's Dennis. I'm from Gainesville, Virginia. And this is a broadcast question. It kind of gets to what you were talking about a second ago. Is there any chance you guys would broadcast more games, spring training games, next year? It is painful to listen to other broadcasters compared to you guys.
Are you available to be our agent?
Well, it isn't something that we have a hand in deciding. One of the reasons that we're here doing this show is in lieu of more spring training games. We're doing this show in addition to the games that we're doing. So all of our games have been home games. In the past, we had games that would go to another station that isn't available anymore. So certainly it's possible we could do more games. If that's something that you folks want, then you should express that to the club.
But we've certainly, I mean, this is our fourth show here, and we've enjoyed the opportunity to interact and have a great crowd here. Normally, the times that we get to interact, you know, one-on-one with fans, we're not necessarily happy about it because it means it's raining and we're in a rain delay.
So, and we're taking phone calls.
We're taking phone calls.
So this is more fun because instead of just talking to people on the phone, we're getting to see you and meet you.
And we certainly have to thank the folks with the Nationals and Kyle Brostowitz and PR for providing us with the great guests, because, I mean, for the folks who are here, getting a chance to meet, you know, Sean Doolittle during the break and getting a chance to hear from him has been a real treat. And all of our shows, we've had, you know, members of the Nationals front office, and obviously Davey Martinez was here for a show, and several players. So that it's a great opportunity, and hopefully in the future, something we can continue down here.
It'd be great to do these again next year. I think the folks at Brother Jimmy's would like us to, you know.
We're packing them in. You got to get here early.
There was a line out the door tonight. Sir, what's your name? Where are you from?
Yes, I'm David, and I'm from Fairfax County, South County. And I want to know who is Bang and who is Zoom. The Bang Zoom brothers.
I don't think they're brothers. Where did it come from?
I just like hearing that every time. A couple times a game.
It seems something good happened.
Yep.
But I do have a question.
It came from the, you know, back in the day when at RFK fireworks would go off after every home run and after every last out of a win. So that was describing the fireworks. Bang, zoom, they go.
Another curly W. Love it. Question is regarding, if you could share some insight as to why Gio didn't work out with the future plans of the Nationals, you know, kind of what his status is now and his chances of really latching on to something that would do him justice.
Well, as you know, they traded Gio at the end of August to the Milwaukee Brewers, and he was in the last year of his contract and became a free agent, which he still is. We've seen video of him throwing simulated games against some college players down in Miami, and that we'd seen him up to 75 pitches, 100 pitches. There have been some stories in the last few days that there's been conversations between his people and the Yankees, who have some injuries to their starting pitching staff. But that's as much as we've heard to this point.
I think whether it's Gio Gonzalez or Dallas Keuchel or Craig Kimbrell or any of the big-name free agents who are still out there. I mean, finally, Carlos Gonzalez just signed a minor league deal with the Indians. These players and their agents have a number and a number of years and a number of $1 million they want on their deal.
Yep.
And if you're not finding that number, well, are you willing to take a lesser number? Because the teams obviously are valuing these players at one point. And the players and the agents are valuing them at a different point, and there's too much separation for those to meet in between. As far as a reunion with the Nationals, I mean, we heard from Mike early on, Patrick Corbin was the guy that they targeted as their number one. The catcher was number two, but big-time starting pitcher was number one, so they signed Corbin. And then they ended up signing Sanchez, replacing Roark. And Helixson is on a very low contract, incentive-laden. So that obviously doesn't mix with what obviously if Gio's looking for 2 years and no one's willing to go to that level, why he's still sitting out there. So that's why there was no reunion.
Yeah, and it may be with any club now, the difference could be 1 year or 2 years. Or in some cases, you know, it's been suggested that, and I don't know how you do this, that, you know, someone like Keuchel or even Craig Kimbrell is waiting around for another team to have an injury, which would increase demand and maybe meet the terms that they would want at that point in time, but that's a big gamble.
Or you wait until after the draft and then your draft pick compensation goes away, which is another factor if those players are signed.
Right.
You lose draft picks.
Certainly in Craig Kimbrell's case, that certainly could be a factor.
That's going to wrap it up.
Yeah, we're out of time here of our shows here at Brother Jimmy's in West Palm Beach. We thank all of you who've come out here tonight. We thank Mike Rizzo and Sean Doolittle, our guests. And for those of you, many of you are here from the nation's capital, D.C., Maryland, Virginia. We hope you'll join us again a week from Wednesday night for our show at Brother Jimmy's at National Harbor. That'll be same time, 6:30 to 8, Wednesday, March to 27th, on what we're calling Opening Day Eve, the night before Opening Day, which, of course, is the next afternoon, the Nationals and the New York Mets. Our next game broadcast on 106.7 The Fan and the Nationals Radio Network will be this Thursday night. We'll be on the air at 6:30 for a 6:35 first pitch for the Nationals and the St. Louis Cardinals. We'll also broadcast from Nationals Park for the first time this year next Monday when the Nationals take on the Yankees. That's the 25th of March, and that'll be a 5:05 game. We'll have our broadcast at 5 o'clock. And I know we'll see many of you out at the park next Monday and for the start of the season next week.
And everybody's there on Thursday.
Everybody's there. Big crowds for the Nationals, the Mets, and then, of course, the Phillies will come in. So I know you folks are going to be there and really noisy for that series as well.
Absolutely.
We say thanks to our engineer as always. He goes with us wherever we go. We can put him in a box of luggage, but we let him just come with us. He's the jack of all things. Jack Hicks, our engineer. Back in our studios in the nation's capital. Oh, standing O for the jack of all things.
Got a bigger ovation than Doolittle.
There you go. Back in our studios, as we like to call him, Slick Vic Ferreira. That's our broadcast team for these shows and for all 162 games of the regular season. That'll do it for us. Thanks to the folks here at Brother Jimmy's for their support. Thanks to Graham Capital Wealth Management, our title sponsor. For Dave Jagler, Charlie Slows saying thanks for joining us for these shows here from West Palm, National Spring Training Live here on 106.7 The Fan.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.